Steve. Good afternoon. This is Julie Fedorchak with the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It is 1 o'clock, just after 1, and we are gathered for a work session on case number PU-16-614, the Epping Transmission Company LLC application for a pipeline. So we had this hearing. When was this hearing?
November 22nd.
Oh, here we go. November 22nd. Commissioner Kalk, you were unable to attend, but I assume you have or will kind of look at what happened and gather.
I'm tracking.
There weren't any real big public issues. There was no public testimony at all.
I believe just the
Labor's union. Evan talked about the company had adopted some responsible contractor policies, and it seemed like they have, you know, met with their favorable approval. Generally, am I correct in that? I think they said they had some ups and downs, but they felt like they'd learned from their mistakes and that they were operating in more sound ways or more by industry standards or something now.
That's an accurate summary of what he testified to, from what I can remember at least.
Okay. And then there was a fair number of the biggest issue for me was the winter construction. They want a waiver from our winter construction. Basically, we don't allow it unless they get a waiver, and so that's what they want. And we did ask some question about their staffing of their system, and they weren't real clear in the hearing about how the system would be monitored and staffed. So they have since provided a late filed exhibit on that, and they did provide some plans for their winter construction as well. Those are the big ones that I remember being outstanding, but maybe, Brian, you can kind of walk through the other outstanding issues.
Well, as far as the...
For the record, we have two Brians and two Julies today.
That's right.
That was Commissioner Brian Kalk's voice you just heard, and this is Brian Schmidt.
The attorney.
I guess as far as primary issues that popped up at the hearing, I think you covered the two main ones. The rest of the... things that would typically be considered issues, landowner waivers, things like that, were taken care of at the hearing. So I guess taking that into consideration, we also had the unanticipated cultural resource discovery. There's a question that came up about that, and they provided a late-filed exhibit. I believe it's late-filed exhibit number 15 that outlined their procedures for unanticipated cultural resource discoveries. And then there was also a request for the other utilities that would be within, I guess, close proximity as to where this pipeline would go, and the company has submitted late filed exhibit number 14, which is a map showing the co-located pipelines. I believe there's other utilities on there too, including existing overhead electric pipelines. And then lastly, there was a request for the company's 10-year spill history, which they've provided as late filed exhibit number 13. And looking at late filed exhibit number 13, it's a fairly comprehensive explanation as to their spills over the last, I guess this only dates back to 2013, so I don't know if they had additional spills prior to 2013, but this is a fairly comprehensive description of each one of the spills that they've identified in this document at least.
So since we asked for 10 years and it's labeled 10 years, but it only goes back 3 years. Can you tidy up that so
yes.
We have that figured out, whether it is that they don't have a history longer than that or they can provide the full history? Okay. That it?
As far as the issues that we talked about at the hearing, that there were still some outstanding questions on, I believe that was it. Nothing else comes to mind that was still pending as far as when we adjourned the hearing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I will say
Bill McCarthy with E3 Environmental. I don't know. I sort of was left with some questions after his testimony. He said that that they will try to avoid the need for importing topsoil, but if there is a need, there's no plan in place regarding quality control. I don't recall if that was something he brought up or if that was in response to a question from me or what, because it's something that concerns me. So it probably was just response to a question. But I don't know if there's something that should be done with that or not. I think that if there's going to be winter digging, there's the chance that that becomes needed. And we can't afford for people to become reckless and just bringing in anything and calling it topsoil. Mm-hmm. They need to follow some kind of standards on that.
I agree. Julie, do you want to go through? That kind of leads nicely to a more detailed discussion about the winter construction, which I think we should do. Would you mind kind of pulling that out and from your engineering perspective, talk through what they've provided and what you think of it?
And Commissioner, in going through the hearing testimony, they were to provide an explanation of need, ways to avoid it, technical explanations to ensure quality and integrity, and reclamation assurance. And so this is the document that they provided. It really looks like a general plan where they've just really starred the, gone through it and starred those items which relate to winter construction.
A quick question, Julie Prescott. I don't recall how we defined winter. Was it date specific, or do we use another? I think it's frost. Date.
Frost.
It has to do with the frost when I think it's the frost in the subsoil. It's in our certification. I can pull it up.
No, I just trying to remember the defining point of it. And then,
Topsoil must be removed before topsoil freezes in the late fall / early winter to the point that frost subsoil must be placed over, or to the point that frost inhibits proper soil segregation.
A judgment call.
Yeah, it's not an objective date necessarily. It's whenever that condition occurs. And that's paragraph 12 of the certification, which they have signed. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead, Jewel.
During the testimony, the company representative had testified to a number of measures that they would undertake to ensure reclamation success, and those items are starred in this document and include allowing the snow to remain as an insulation, minimizing the amount of open trench at any one time, maintaining visible fencing, and using small-bladed equipment so as to minimize the chance for large chunks to be removed containing subsoil. And there was some discussion also about replacing topsoil in the spring and bringing in topsoil we talked about.
So they don't, to Grandy's question, they don't really provide any additional detail in this.
No.
About how they, where they're, how they'll certify that topsoil to be clean or
if you look under this, the heading detailed construction procedures, and if you look at point one, and then we have the last star where it says all topsoil to be replaced in spring. Under that, it states that any topsoil replacement needed will be replaced using the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Soil Survey Center, and Williams County Soils Report. So I don't know if that really satisfies what you're requesting, but there is some additional explanation.
Sure.
In there.
Thanks for pointing that out, Brian.
I guess off the cuff, I would almost be more supportive of a winter construction than for a spring. It's going to be a wet, mucky spring, and once they have an order approved, then the frost goes out, they can start digging. I think there's less impact to the land if you do it in winter construction than a particularly wet spring.
I'm not following. Are you saying?
If we didn't approve the winter construction, but we approved it, as soon as the frost, judgment call again, as soon as the frost kind of goes out, they'll start working, and it gets pretty sloppy and mucky up there. And I've seen problems on the other end when we
right.
that were probably more pronounced than they would have been had we approved the winter construction.
Yeah.
So if we don't go with the winter construction, perhaps consider something on the spring construction as, you know, matting or something that damage. I think I've seen that before in orders. So I guess I go either way, but I think that.
Well, you know, we added that requirement to our certification because, A, there was research done by NDSU that on how to have the best reclamation, and that was one of the things,
yep.
pretty strong recommendations in that report. And in talking with experts like, you know, Kathy
Spillman, Bill McCarthy, and Jim Deutsch.
Yeah. All said the best way to get the, you know, be sure that you're going to get the proper soil segregation is to do it before freezing. So I have since, you know, to your point, I've heard people on the opposite side coming up and saying, you know, there's some good things about winter construction. And I even had one landowner at a separate meeting tell me recently that he's thinking about requiring in all of his future easements that the ditch be just like 24 or however wide. So it's a ditch. It's like a ditch, not a whole easement. Yep. And that's what he's going to require on his land. And he thinks winter, in to that end, he said, I don't even care about soil segregation. Just scoop it up, put it to the side. Winter construction would be better because you're not impacting the land as much because it's frozen.
Right.
And cover it back up. And if it's only a couple feet wide, it's not a big deal. If it doesn't, you know, the grass will fill in. That's his take. That doesn't go with the science that we've been basing our certification requirement on. So we just have to make a decision, and if we, you know, we have to make a decision on this case whether we feel that they have provided enough specifics about how they're going to protect that topsoil and make sure that it's done right. I agree with you that it could be a sloppy mess in the spring.
I'm okay with whatever we decide. I just wanted to point that out.
Randy, do you have any additional thoughts on this winter construction? Or Julie, do you have thoughts? What do you think about the plan that they proposed?
It pretty much reflects to what they testified they would do. There are, I just point this out, there are such things as industry best practices documents for guidelines during pipeline construction in frozen conditions that offer additional suggestions. This one is one that was prepared, and we briefly discussed it when we were going through this process for the certification revisions. It talks mm-hmm. about, you know, how to stockpile the snow away, what types of equipment to use. It talks about crowning, how to replace it, methods for replacing the soil, best practices. For lack of a better discussion, our word, crushing the chunks to make them
right.
sure that the subsidence is minimized, things like that. There are such documents like this out there that could provide additional detail on how to go about it if we wanted to
reference.
Go into that detail or reference it.
Mm-hmm. So the option would be to, a couple options would be, I like that idea, Julie, to go back to the company and say, we agree to these, or to just stipulate in the order that they have to construct according to this, to the recommendations of the whatever guide that is. Follow the winter construction guidelines included in such and such report.
This is a gas pipeline. It's INGA, and there's the American Natural Gas Association, mm-hmm. but there's probably something for crude oil too. Just, mm-hmm. just something that I had ran across 3 years ago. We were doing this.
Right.
Has anyone had contact with the company? Is this something that's even a priority of theirs anymore? Because my understanding during the hearing was that they weren't committing to, even if this was approved, that they were going to do this project this winter, that it was hinging on DAPL being able to be completed. And, of course, this hearing was before the latest developments on that holdup. And so is this something that they're even real strongly concerned about at this point?
Commissioner, I can provide at least a little bit of insight. I've had conversations with the company's counsel. My understanding is, as of right now, they're basically sitting there waiting for DAPL to get the go-ahead. If that happens in the winter, they'd obviously want to start constructing during the winter months. If it doesn't happen in the winter, I think the testimony at the hearing was fairly clear that this project's completely contingent upon the completion of DAPL. So as far as whether it is a priority or not for the company, I guess my understanding would be it depends.
My read on their testimony at the hearing was that they wanted to be completed by the time DAPL was completed.
And
like that, not waiting till it's completed and then start construction.
That's probably true because this is a short pipeline. I think they would still wait until there was an approval for DAPL, just so they're not putting
right.
a pipeline in that basically goes to nowhere.
But this would probably get built while
DAPL's
the river's being bored.
That was my understanding
of
what would be happening here.
Okay. So if it gets approved in January, they'd want to start constructing. If DAPL gets approved in January.
Theoretically speaking, that would be my understanding from my conversations and hearing the testimony.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you think about that?
I think we made the right choice one time to require that these things be built when the ground is not frozen. However, you know, this or really most industries continue to evolve. They come up with new techniques. Julie's laid out a frozen ground, kind of a best standards, best practices. You know, the only way you evolve and come up with better ideas is to try things once in a while. I wouldn't support this to do it if it was 250 miles across the state. But we're talking a little over 3 miles. Maybe this is how we learn and evolve, by approving one under, you know, specific standards and requirements and seeing how it works out. If you don't experiment some, though, you're never going to learn anything new.
All right, I agree. And I think it would be good to either stipulate in the order or get agreement on the front end from the company.
So I guess at this point, talk to the company, see if they'll agree to those terms, and if not, we'll move forward with something in a proposed order for your consideration.
Okay.
Can you explain those terms again for me one time? I'm a little bit skittish saying, I like where we're going with this, but have them comply with our standards, and I don't know how we would measure what they're doing there, and that's to follow through. And that's a lot of vagary in those things usually. So explain to me what you think they would be agreeing to and how we would follow up on that.
And quite frankly, this is the first time I've seen this
okay.
manual. I don't know what the commission's familiarity is with it, if this is something.
Maybe a statement in the order saying the company agrees to utilize the best practices and something like that. So then that doesn't say specifically the company will follow Umptifrat's order or whatever, agree to the best practices recommended and something like that.
Yeah, I like tying it to something. Otherwise, you've got nothing to go by. And whether it's that, I mean, I remember looking at that quite extensively when we were coming up with our new certification. And whether it's that or there's a North Dakota one, Julie, I think there's a whole section of the best practices for reclamation, effective reclamation, okay. North Dakota, put out by NDSU Extension.
Yep, but no, that makes sense.
And there's a winter construction stipulations there, and if we stipulate that they're to follow those guidelines.
You said something about that being natural gas. That's what got me thinking. It's not natural gas, is it?
This is not a natural gas.
No,
this is not a natural
no,
gas.
No, I understand that, but the standards are there for
the
crude.
Okay. It's put out by this.
By ANGA, you said. Which is gas.
You're right.
I'm fine, Julie. Just
do it.
That's the point.
Yeah,
and
let's
then
find that.
The construction inspection, make sure we somehow tie it back to that. I like your point, Randy. It's an experience. I agree. 3 miles, I agree with, not 200.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And really, when it would come into effect would be if there's a problem.
Absolutely.
So hopefully, you know, there's standards spelled out. They'll follow them. They'll do it right, and there won't be a problem, and all will be well, and the grass will grow back.
The buffalo will roam.
I guess just for clarification, does the commission wish to have the company consider this particular guideline as the objective standard that they have to use when doing, or is it the NDSU extension?
I think the NDSU one, because it's specific to North Dakota.
And
then there's winter construction. Yes, we have used that before. And there's winter construction stuff spelled out in that.
Because you know NDSU is a fine institute.
They never go wrong.
Well.
Except for last weekend.
I believe.
Pull it out, Julie, and refresh on it. But I can almost see the page where all the winter construction stuff was.
It has some. It doesn't have this kind of detail, though.
It doesn't?
No. It talks about other things that this document doesn't, if I remember. It talks about concerns about erosion during the spring melt. Mm. That's something that's not talked about in here, and that's.
Maybe what it says is don't construct in the winter.
Less optimal.
Yeah. Well, you get where we're going. Why don't you guys look at that in this one and see if you can come up with a stipulation that either the company will agree with or that we can just add to the order. It would be best if the company was on board with it on the front end. But then we'd still stipulate it in the order, I guess, or include it somehow.
And you're thinking I'm okay with a January 4th goal, is what you're thinking? Or you're thinking
we can get it done by then. I'm fine. I think that would be fine. Or the next meeting after that, if some of this stuff isn't tidied up before then. And then we got to get that spill history, too. Randy, do you have any other questions on this one?
No, I'm just thinking, you know, as when it comes to the erosion and things like that, typically more of a problem when we're running through the Badlands or even rougher terrain. But, I mean, a good part of this is along a railroad track. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it's right beside a town. I'm thinking that there's not a lot of hills involved here. But that doesn't mean there can't be erosion where they cross, like, either highway or train ditches and things like that. So it's still important, but I don't think it's the likelihood of a problem as it would be if it were something that were going through the Badlands.
Okay. Looking at the location map of the other facilities, it looks like they've followed some existing corridors pretty closely, which is always good.
Which I'm glad you reminded me of that, because it begs a question, and I had seen this in my notes before I came in. So let me just have a minute to find something here.
I didn't see in their draft about where the county had approved something. I saw water board comments, but was there a county approval somewhere that I just missed? Usually we put that in the order somewhere.
I believe they testified that Williams County doesn't require a conditional use permit, but they had gotten a permit from the city of Epping.
Okay. Williams County does not require it?
I think that's what they said. Do you remember that?
I don't remember off the top of my head exactly how that testimony came out.
Okay.
I can double check.
That's something.
Well, let's put that in the order then. Williams County does not require it, because I know that I'm thinking back to the gas plant that's up there in Williams County. We've had more problem, or I've been involved in more discussions with the runoff from the water board, and there was a lot of frustration then of that project. And now that you say that, that's right, there wasn't a county permit, and it was just the water board. The counties kind of turned that over to the water board. So maybe just put that as a finding.
Okay, now I want to throw out something else that maybe is more of a concern. I never really pieced this together so much until now.
I did not know that.
Mr. Smith said that about 75% of this line is co-located with other underground infrastructure. Mr. Brady said the minimum separation distance on co-locations is 10 to 15 feet. When they're digging through the frozen ground, is that a problem with them to be digging that close to someone else's infrastructure?
Yeah, I would think it'd be
only 10 feet away.
A bigger problem in the spring when it's mushy out than it would be in the winter.
That may very well be too. But in either event, you know, we had a problem over the last years that came up recently about one company's work impacting the next company's pipeline. So a lot of this is pretty close to other people's stuff. So
10 feet from One Oak, that is pretty close.
I just don't know if the pounding that it takes when they dig through the frost, if that would have any impact on... I wouldn't think so, but...
What kind of agreement do they have to have from, say, a One Oak to be 10 feet within there?
Probably about the easements. One Oak's got an easement that's a certain amount of feet, and these guys have an easement that's a certain amount of feet, so as long as they're not operating on top of One Oak's easement, they're probably okay.
10 feet, when they have...
They might operate on one... It depends how it lays out. They could be on their side and not actually ever be above the One Oak side. So then the question would be, just as they're digging, they'd have to put everything on the one side. So normally if you put topsoil on one side and the other side, that's a fair question. That's all speculation, what I just said.
Yeah. Well, and this is the problem with late-filed exhibits, is because you get the information, then it brings up more questions, and you don't have any way to... Ugh.
Question for the company.
Yeah.
How are they going to mitigate these concerns, whether it's winter construction or summer construction?
On the closeness.
On the proximity to the other utilities that are in the area.
When they would get ready, when this company would get ready to start their construction, as Commissioner Kalk could assure us, they have to call before they dig. So One Oak and the others that are co-located will come out and have to mark it. Right. And so when you mark it, what's your assumption of how far that activity is going to stay away? You know, is it just your assumption that nobody's going to hit it directly, or that it's going to stay some certain distance away so as not to have an impact? I don't know.
I don't know. What's that, Pat?
Well, the other one's 80.
Yeah, 2 feet is the law, right? Yeah, if you're closer than 2 feet, it's the hand dig zone. So you that's your point.
Oh, well, so maybe that's just what it is then.
But if they don't have an easement to be over there, that's the next question. How do their easements lay out?
I guess the one that jumps out at me, well, there's two really that are under 20 feet, Summit and the One Oak. The others are 50, 25, 75, and 80. So... Why don't you ask the company about the any agreements they have with those companies, or how they're going to, if they've done everything that needs to be done to construct that close, and if and address the concerns of proximity.
Yep, noted. I'll check. Okay. Check with the company.
All right. Julie, the unanticipated discovery plan is in order.
Council and I were talking about that earlier. There seems to be on the back page, they talk about notification of SHPO, but they don't specifically call out notifying the PSC and obtaining a clearance to proceed, which is on my mind a lot here lately.
Yeah, because it needs to be in both. It needs to be consistent. It's in the certification document, but... The certification document might not be what the person on site pulls out when they come across something. So that needs to be added to their directions, to their plan. Okay. What else, Julie?
I didn't see anything else in here that... was an issue.
So Brian, do you want to go through what we've identified as items that need to be tied up?
Sure. The first thing we talked about was the spill history going back 10 years as opposed to what appears to be three from Leaf Out Exhibit number 13. The second issue is seeing whether the company would agree to stipulate to the NDSU standards that they've set forth throughout their study on construction recommendations, specifically winter construction recommendations.
And then, but if Julie and you look at that and there aren't specifics, then I would like you to pull from this ANGA one because it does stipulate. But, Brian, are you guys okay with that?
Yeah, I'll just look through that. I just didn't have a chance to look through it either.
Okay. Quite frankly, I haven't either, so I can't really speak intelligently about this new document. Okay. The other issue that we were to follow up on was the Williams County permits, whether they were necessary on the conditional use permit issue. That might be something that's on the hearing record. I just don't recall off the top of my head. Okay. The other...
Put that in the order, if that's whatever the case is.
Yep. The other issue that we had was the proximity to other utilities, specifically how their easements work, if there's any encroachment agreements, things of that nature. And the two companies we were concerned with on that were Summit and One Oak. I believe they were the ones who were within the zone that the commission expressed some concern about. And finally, the unanticipated discovery plan, getting something tied up, I guess, that would require them to notify the Public Service Commission in the event of an unexpected cultural find.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Excellent. All right. I think that does it for me. Randy, anything more?
I do not.
And Brian?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Then if we can get all those things ready and done and agreed to by... Oh, wait. You know what? There is one more thing. The monitoring plan. So they do 12-hour shifts, and there's five people that rotate through 24/7 monitoring all the stuff in North Dakota, which is about 438 miles, which is helpful to see all that. Is that consistent with what we're seeing elsewhere? Five people, 12-hour shifts.
The 12-hour shift is consistent, but I don't know I've ever seen. I remember touring Hess's facility and Enbridge's over the years, and the 12-hour shifts are normal. And the number, I think, is just based on a number that they... There's got to be a minimum number, but I don't... That's probably it.
Yeah.
But I don't recall ever knowing exactly how many operators they have.
Seems like that would come out to about five full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big thing, as long as they're properly trained and have the right certifications.
And they're qualified. They stayed in here that they're qualified per PHMSA requirements. So, okay. That seems in order. Julie, you guys agree? All right. Okay, so then we'll tidy up those items that are remaining, and if we can get it on the next agenda, we will. If not, we'll wait till the following agenda in... or following meeting in January.
And if we have another work session, let's bring Randy Goswalski from downstairs to the meeting, too. So we can have a Randy, a Julie, and a Brian times two. Right? We do have another Randy on staff.
Yeah, we should do that sometime just for fun.
I just typically haven't needed help here.
He's getting pretty big for his britches now, isn't he?
Yes,
he's going to be the chair.
You're going to have to give him bigger britches,
yep.
Maybe.
Keep bringing those things.
All right. That concludes the work session on case number PU-16-614. Thanks, everyone.